I'm starting this evening a series of Bible studies on the life of Jacob. When you read the book of Genesis falls into two parts, two unequal parts. The first 11 chapters of the book of Genesis records some major events. When we read the first 11 chapters, it's mainly events that we're reading about. We read about creation, and then we read about the fall, and then we read about the spread of sin, Cain murdering Abel, and how Cain's people then became increasingly sinful. And then we read about the flood and the aftermath of the flood, and then we read about the Tower of Babel. So those first 11 chapters of Genesis are mainly focused on events. But then from 12 to 50, that long second part of Genesis is about people. And there are four men that are at the center of those long, of that long passage, chapter 12 to chapter 50. It's Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph. That's Genesis, 1 to 11 events, and 12 to 50, four men, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. And it's interesting that actually we have more details about the life of Jacob than we do about any of the others. That's a very interesting fact. We have quite a lot about Abraham. We don't have a huge amount about Isaac. Isaac has the smallest amount of detail. We have quite a lot about Joseph, but in between them, you have Jacob. And there's an enormous amount of detail of Jacob's life. So over the next few months, I'm not sure how long this series is going to take, we're going to look at all these passages where we are taught about Jacob. What I want to do this evening, I'm not going to begin the exposition of the passages. I'm going to present an introduction, and I'm going to ask a simple question. Why should we study the life of Jacob? Although there's a lot of detail about Jacob, actually, very few Christians know a huge amount about him. He doesn't stand out. If I were to say to you, name the most important characters of the Old Testament, I guess you would come up with Abraham, obviously, and with Moses, and David, and Solomon, and Isaiah, and Jeremiah. But I don't think Jacob would immediately spring to mind. I doubt if Jacob would make it into the top 10 of our list of the most important characters in the Old Testament. And yet, as I say, there is a huge amount of detail about him. So why then should we study the life of Jacob? Well, I have three reasons for you. And that's what we're going to do this evening. Look at three reasons why should we study the life of Jacob. The first reason is this. Jacob reminds us that God sustains his people in times of great trials and tribulation. Jacob reminds us that God sustains his people in times of great trials and tribulation. Now, we know that all of God's people pass through great trials. That's something that we know. We know that Abel, who was a godly man, was murdered by his brother Cain. We know that Noah passed through difficult times. We know that Abraham and Joseph and Moses and David and Solomon, we know that they all passed through difficult times. I wonder if you've ever thought about the trials, the tribulations, the difficulties that Jacob passed through. If, like me, you're a parent, you may find the next few minutes of this Bible study rather disturbing. I'm not going to say these things out of gratuitous pleasure or something like that, but the Bible does tell us about Jacob's family, And there were some pretty horrible stuff that happened in his family. For over 20 years, Jacob believed that his favorite son was dead. You know the story of Joseph, who was Jacob's favorite son. And you know that his brothers sold him into slavery. And you know that his brothers then took his coat that Jacob had given him, dipped it in animal blood, and brought it back to Jacob and said, "Do you recognize this coat?" And Jacob said, "This is indeed the coat of my son Joseph. My son Joseph is surely dead." And for the next 20 years, we actually have a fairly clear chronology of Joseph's life. And it is 20 years Jacob believed that his son Joseph was dead. Now, let me say this about grief. Grief never goes. Grief changes. Grief goes through periods when it's particularly intense, and it goes through periods when it isn't so intense. Grief expresses itself in different ways. Grief never goes. That is because grief is closely related to love. And because love never dies, grief never dies. If you lose a loved one, you love that person. And your love for that person doesn't die when that person dies. But the love turns to grief. And we must never imagine that after perhaps 2, 3, 4 years, Jacob stopped grieving. Jacob never stopped grieving for his son Joseph. But that wasn't the only trial he had. I wonder if you know this. It is recorded in the Bible that Jacob also lost 2 of his grandsons. His son Judah had 3 sons. And the older 2, a man called Er, and a man called Onan, both died. And as far as we're able to tell, they died in their late teens or early 20s. They were young men. In fact, the circumstances of their deaths are particularly horrible. The text in Genesis says, "The Lord put them to death." For both of them, that's how it is recorded in Genesis chapter 38. It says, was a wicked man, and the Lord put him to death. And then a few verses later, it says, Onan was a wicked man, and the Lord put him to death. So Jacob had 2 grandsons who were so wicked. It's very rare in the Bible to find that sort of thing. Very rare does it actually say God put somebody to death. That's a very rare statement. God will allow people to be killed by their enemies and so on. But this direct statement, direct verb, is very rarely used. But it is used of these 2 young men because they were so absolutely wicked. So you see, Jacob has this now that he's a favorite son, as far as he knows, or is concerned, is dead. And 2 of his grandsons are so wicked that the Lord puts them to death. I'm afraid the trials of Jacob with regard to his family aren't over. There's something even more horrible coming up. Jacob's daughter, Dinah, was horribly raped by a man called Shechem. That's again recorded in the Bible. They were staying in a particular place, and there were these Canaanites there, a group called Shechem, and his father Hamor, and Shechem took hold of Jacob's daughter Dinah. And the text in Genesis, we will of course read all these passages, the text in Genesis says, he raped her and humiliated her. That's how Moses records it. We don't know exactly what happened. It's probably best that we don't know. But it does say he raped her and humiliated her. Now, can you imagine this happening to anyone? Can you imagine your favorite son dies? two of your grandsons are so wicked that in their late teens, early 20s, they die, and your daughter is raped. Jacob had that happen in his life. And yet, and I will come back to this point in a few moments this evening, Jacob never apostatized. There is never a single verse anywhere, and we have a lot of passages about Jacob's life. There isn't a single verse anywhere that says that Jacob turned his back on the Lord, that Jacob walked away from God, that Jacob stopped believing in God, Jacob stopped calling himself a child of God, a child of the covenant, or anything like that. In fact, and I'm going to come back to this point, we will see that Jacob's devotion to God increased. But I will come back to this point in a moment. But this is the first point that I want to make this evening, that Jacob reminds us that God sustains his people in times of great trials and tribulations. He went through enormous trials, this poor man. It's a shame that we as Christians know so little about him. His story is all there in Scripture. Moses has recorded it. And all these incidents that I've told you about, I've only got them from the Bible. Joseph being sold as a slave, and the blood-dipped coat brought back, and Dinah being raped, and Ur and Onan being killed by the Lord. That's all there in the text. And he goes through all of this, but he never walks away from God because God sustains him. And I pray that as we study the life of Jacob, this will encourage you. Jesus said, you will have many trials in this life, but be encouraged, I have overcome the world. But he does say that you will have many trials in this life. The Apostle Paul says, all who desire to live godly lives here on earth will face persecution. So we will all face difficult times. We will all face trials. Perhaps they're related to our family, as they were with Jacob. Perhaps they're related to our work. Perhaps they're related to our health. Whatever. You know, the trials come from different sources. But we will face trials. We're in a world which has been infected by sin. And trials come to everyone. Well, brethren, I trust that this will encourage you. God sustains his people through the severest of trials. I pray, God, none of us have these events in our families. Jacob, his favorite son, has died, as far as he knows. Two grandsons died, and a daughter raped. But he still continued to walk with the Lord, and God sustained him. I give glory to God there, not to Jacob. God sustained this man. So that's the first reason I would like us to study the life of Jacob, because he reminds us that God sustains his people in times of great trials. There's a second reason why I want to study the life of Jacob, and it is this. Jacob reminds us that God sustains his people through all the changing seasons of life. Jacob reminds us that God sustains his people through all the changing seasons of life. It's a very interesting story that you read about Jacob. And you need an atlas when you're reading Jacob, because Jacob is constantly on the move. This is why I've made this point that God sustained him through the changing seasons of life. Because Jacob's life went through so many changes. When he was in his father's home, in Isaac and Rebekah's home, and he was growing up, they were in an area called Beersheba. That's where they lived. Then he leaves his parents' home and goes to a place called Haran, which is quite a long way away. And he's all on his own. And he goes to his uncle, Laban, whom he's never met, and who is an idolater. Laban is not one of God's covenant people. There's mention of idolatry. It occurs two or three times that Laban's idolatry is mentioned. He was clearly an idolater. So he leaves his parents' home in Beersheba, probably as a teenager, and goes on his own to Haran, where Laban lives. Now, while there, he acquires two wives, two concubines, and a large family of children. He then leaves Haran and goes to a place called Shechem. So in his life, he's moved from Beersheba to Haran to Shechem. At Shechem is where that rape took place of Dinah. And he leaves Shechem because of that, because of the fallout from that rape. He leaves Shechem and goes to another place called Bethel. And he lives in Bethel for many years. By this time, he's quite an old man, I would imagine in his 70s. And then in his 70s, when he's in Bethel, a huge famine strikes the land. And he leaves Bethel with his family, and they move to Egypt, where his son is now prime minister. And they live in an area called Goshen in Egypt. So that's five different areas that Jacob has lived in. Beersheba, Haran, Shechem, Bethel, Egypt. And five totally different situations. In Beersheba, where he was growing up, he had his father and mother, Isaac and Rebekah, and he had his twin brother Esau. And there was tension there, of course. And then he leaves Beersheba and goes to Haran, where his uncle Laban is. That's a totally different situation. He is an idolater. And he acquires, as I say, two wives, two concubines, and a whole load of children. So his entire life situation changes completely. He then leaves Haran and comes to Shechem, a completely different situation. He's now in the midst of idolaters again, but they're not his family. Laban was his uncle. So although he was in Laban's house and Laban is an idolater, at least Laban is his uncle, his mother's brother. But he's now among the Amorites, among the Canaanites. And one of them rapes his daughter in Shechem. So he upsticks and goes to Bethel, which is a completely different area, and starts life there. And then in his 70s, he upsticks again with his entire extended family, his children, grandchildren, everybody, and they all move to Egypt. Now, all through this, God sustains him. He never apostatizes. He never leaves the faith. He never turns his back on God. In fact, as I'm going to make the point in my third point this evening, he actually grows as a Christian. His faith, his walk with God is an upward curve. This is a point I'm going to make in a moment. So, all through these changes, God is with him. God sustains him. God enables him to remain faithful. God enables him to grow. I make that point because the Christian life is a changing life. We go through changes. In your family, you will go through changes. I'm about to have a massive change in my family. I'm about to acquire a daughter-in-law. And God willing, in the next 2 or 3 years, I will have grandchildren. What does it feel like to have a daughter-in-law? I don't know. I've never had a daughter-in-law. What does it feel like to have grandchildren? I don't know. You see, these changes will come. In your life, changes will come. God willing, in our church life, changes will come. Can I say this to you? One of my biggest prayers is that when the COVID thing dies down and we start meeting in our building again, I'm praying and praying and praying things will be different. And I am making this point. We mustn't be threatened by change. We mustn't become so set in our ways. We mustn't become so, you know, we cling on to certain practices, certain traditions, so that, oh, if, you know, change threatens us. Change shouldn't threaten us. Every change is an opportunity to prove the faithfulness of our God. Every change is an opportunity to discover depths of grace and depths of love and depths of power in our God. You see, while Jacob was with his father and mother in Beersheba, well, I'm sure his father told him that God is a gracious God, a loving God, a faithful God. But he hadn't proved it himself. He just heard it from his father. You know, his father had proved it. Isaac had proved God's faithfulness. But Jacob himself, now if Jacob had remained in Beersheba, he might never have proved it. But as a teenager, he goes to Haran, to Laban's house, surrounded by idolaters. And he sees there just how faithful and gracious and loving and kind and compassionate God is. He then leaves Haran and comes to Shechem. And even on the journey, because remember, it's on that journey that he met his brother Esau, and he was so frightened of meeting his brother. He was anxious. He spent a whole night anxious. So once again, because of that change, he proved the faithfulness of God. He saw depths in God's love and God's grace that he hadn't seen in Beersheba or in Haran. And then they have to leave Shechem and they go to Bethel. And again, he proves the grace of God. His favorite son has died, as far as he knows. But God sustains him. So he has proved the faithfulness of God, the power of God, and the love of God. And then the famine comes. And he realizes that God has provided a means for them to survive the famine. God has been at work, and his son Joseph is prime minister in Egypt, and they can go and move to Egypt. So they all move to Egypt. And again, because of the great change, he sees depths in God's love, God's grace, God's faithfulness. He would never have seen any of those if he had remained in Beersheba in his father and mother's house. All those changes in circumstances in his life, they all were God's way of teaching him the depths of his love and his grace. Never be afraid of change. Don't ever feel things are not as they were in church or in my family, and I'm anxious. God is always faithful, and God teaches us new things with each change. So that's the second reason I wanted us to study the life of Jacob, because Jacob reminds us that God sustains his people through all the changing seasons of life. Third reason, and I've already alluded to this, Jacob reminds us that God transforms his people by his power and grace. Jacob reminds us that God transforms his people by his power and grace. I hope that you will pick up Genesis. I read chapter 25, the birth of Jacob. So the story of Jacob begins in Genesis 25. And Jacob appears on and off until chapter 49. So that's a good 24, 25 chapters. Not every chapter do you read of Jacob, but he is there in the background, and his story, basically, he appears again in chapter 49. So he's appearing on and off. I hope you read his life. It's a very, very interesting life. When you read his life, you will notice the first two events that are recorded, Jacob exploits his brother's weak position by taking his inheritance. You know that story of Esau comes in and he's hungry, and Jacob is making some stew, And Esau says, I'm dying of hunger, give me some stew. And Jacob says, give me your inheritance and I'll give you some stew. He brutally, heartlessly exploits a man in a weak position. That's what he's doing. It's pure exploitation. He's in a position of strength and this other man is in a position of weakness. Now, you don't exploit people when they're weak, but he does. That's the first event that's recorded in Jacob's life, exploiting a man who is in a disadvantageous position. The second event that you read in Jacob's life is that he lies to his father and deceives his father. That's how the story of Jacob begins. A man who exploits somebody and a man who lies to and deceives his own father. But then you go to the end of the Jacob incident, the Jacob history. You go to Genesis 47, 48, 49. And what do you find at the end? You find three things. Jacob blesses Pharaoh. Jacob blesses two of his grandsons, Ephraim and Manasseh. And Jacob blesses all his sons. Isn't that remarkable? You see what Moses is doing, the way that he's recording this story. Moses is telling us, here is a guy who began life as a complete rotter. That's quite obvious, that's what Moses is saying. Moses is saying, in Jacob we're looking at a man who frankly, when you look at him at the beginning of his life, is a cad. He's a rotter. He has no conscience. He has no good ways of dealing with people. He sees his brother in a disadvantageous position and robs his birthright, takes advantage of that, and he lies to his father and deceives his father when his father is practically blind. Can you imagine? Imagine your father was blind and you actually lie to him and deceive him because he can't see. Jacob does that. That's how Jacob begins. But Jacob goes through all these experiences, goes to Laban, and faces all those trials that I've mentioned. Daughter is raped, grandsons die, favorite son dies, and so on. And all these experiences shape Jacob and mature him as a believer. That's what Moses is telling us. That is why the last three events that Moses records in Jacob's life are all Jacob blessing people, not exploiting them. There's a very clear contrast. It's like those two events are like bookends, and it's like Moses is saying, here is the start, here is the finish, and the start, exploiting, lying, deceiving, and the end, blessing others. Blessing Pharaoh, blessing his grandchildren, and blessing his children, because God has transformed Jacob, and Jacob dies an outstandingly godly man. He doesn't start life terribly well, but he ends life a godly man. And that's a wonderful encouragement. It reminds us that God transforms his people. All those experiences, you see, weren't wasted. God transforms his people by his power and his grace. Well, I hope I've whetted your appetite. I hope you will read the life of Jacob starting in Genesis 25. And in the coming weeks, then we will be looking at those various events in his life and see what lessons we learn from them.